Is your appetite sometimes out of control? Are you unable to stop eating even when you're full? Download our new Intelligent Medicine video, Defensive Eating, Taming Your Addiction to Food. There's a physiological basis for food addiction. The food industry has gripped our brains using powerful food science. Find out what we can do about it. Go to drhoffman.com to download this important video. We will arm you with proven strategies to change your eating behavior forever. Go to drhoffman.com.
Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, nutritionist at the Hoffman Center, and I'm here for another Layla Weighs In. So here we are. So, Happy New Year, as I've said before to everybody. It's January. It's kind of cold out. I'm already looking forward to springtime. I don't know about you, because any day below 40 degrees, you can keep. But that's just me. Anyway, I digress. I thank you very, very much for emailing me your questions. And for those of you who would like to email questions, please email to radioprogram@AOL.com. I'll repeat it, radioprogram@AOL.com. Thank you very much. So, our first question comes from Forrest. Forrest writes, Layla, will drinking extra water or fluid to meet the standard weight divided, you know, weight divided by 2 in ounces per day, increase blood pressure and render medication useless? Let me explain Forrest's question. I normally recommend for most people, as a rule, a kind of flexible rule. People are always asking me, how much water should I be drinking in a day? Many people, I tell them, at least 6 8-ounce cups is a good idea, but always be ruled by your thirst. Another thing I tell patients and clients is take your weight, cut it in half. Say you're a 140-pound woman. Cut that in half. That would be 70, right? And turn that into ounces. So about 70 ounces a day may be appropriate. It could be less than that. It could be a little more than that. But it should be in that general area. There's really no hard and fast rule. And don't forget that we also get water from our produce, from our vegetables and our fruits, sometimes as much as 20 to 40%. So if you're a good vegetable and fruit eater, you're also getting some water there. Other water sources besides plain filtered water, mineral water, Perrier Pellegrino seltzer is fine. Even the essence flavored seltzers are fine as long as there's no added sugar or sugar substitutes. In addition, herbal teas or any decaffeinated beverages will count as your water intake, your water allotment for the day. So coming back to Forrest's question, will drinking extra water or fluid increase blood pressure and render medication useless? So if you're going by the standard recommendation of half your weight in ounces, no, it should not increase blood pressure or render any medication useless. And the other thing is, first of all, our blood pressure is ruled by other things. But let me speak for a moment of overdoing water. When we overdo water, it can be called water intoxication. This can dilute the amount of electrolytes in our system, particularly sodium, which is not a good thing. This can become a medical emergency if you let it go too far. You don't want to be guzzling water all day long in an effort to keep yourself hydrated. A, be ruled by your thirst. B, have at least 6 cups a day. That's really it. We don't need to go overboard. So, getting your regular fluid intake should not increase blood pressure, and render any medication useless. Blood pressure is ruled by other things. Let's talk a little bit about sodium first. Sodium, only 10% of the population with hypertension or high blood pressure is affected by salt or sodium in the diet. And you know what? Sodium is really only the middleman. The real master and commander of what drives a higher blood pressure is actually insulin. So if you're eating a lot of carbohydrates and you have a higher insulin level, what insulin does, besides its very important work of ushering glucose into our cells for energy and providing fat storage, is it causes our body to retain more sodium. So here's what happens. If we have excess insulin, or even just a little more on the high end of normal insulin circulating in our blood, this may cause our system to retain more sodium. And a basic law of diffusion in science is water follows salt from areas of high concentration to low concentration. So that sodium, water follows sodium in our body into our bloodstream. What happens when all this water is coming into our bloodstream because of the sodium? It increases the blood volume. And when we have an increased blood volume, voila, we have high blood pressure. And this is how insulin often is the master and commander of that. So keep that in mind. And again, when you're on a low-carb diet, it also has a very diuretic effect because the lower secretion of insulin by your pancreas helps to lower blood pressure because it has a dehydration effect on the body. You're shedding excess water. When we store a carbohydrate, even in the form of glycogen, hydrate is water. We're also storing excess water that our bodies don't necessarily need. So if you've been told you have high blood pressure, the first place to look is at your diet before you start cutting your sodium intake. And by the way, a lot of people are surprised. Do you know where we get the highest amounts of sodium in the diet? It's not from the salt shaker, as you might think. It's in bread. There's a lot of sodium, in sliced bread. Keep that in mind. Another follow-up question that Forrest is asking, are diuretics, meaning dehydrating medications like HCTZ, hydrochlorothiazide, or Lasix, are diuretics a bad therapy for high blood pressure? Well, a lot of doctors prescribe diuretics for those in addition to a beta blocker or a calcium channel or other high blood pressure medications. Some people are just given HCTZ or a diuretic for their blood pressure. But I think the first order of business is to get a full nutrition assessment to see if you're over-secreting insulin. Because once you cut out the excess carbohydrates from your diet, and the diet itself, a lower-carb diet, will have a diuretic effect on your body, you're no longer going to need the diuretic medication for blood pressure. I'll tell you, since I've worked with Dr. Atkins back in the day, up until my time here at the Hoffman Center, I see over and over again people with prediabetes, overweight, metabolic syndrome, insulin resistance, hyperinsulinism, that's also coupled with high blood pressure. Once we put them on a lower carb diet, they shed some weight and they get a little good healthy dehydration going on because they've been carrying excess water all this time, their blood pressure comes down. And often, and this is, you know, when I do the jig for joy, because as a nutritionist, I want you on as little medication as possible because I want you to be able to do things as naturally as appropriate. But we can't have you walking around with high blood pressure because I don't want you to have a stroke. So you must take your medications. You must not come off your high blood pressure medications on your own. Always with your doctor's supervision, please. Now, so oftentimes, as I was saying, when hyperinsulinism gets better, the blood sugar starts to come down, weight starts to come off, guess what? A beautiful side effect of that is that blood sugar comes down, and then you're able to come down off the doses of high blood pressure medication, including the diuretics like Lasix and HCTZ. And that's when I do the jig of joy, because I'm very happy when you're able to come down off your meds because you no longer need them. But for those of you who right now are taking a diuretic for high blood pressure, you want to make sure that you're hydrating. So for those people, you want to make sure you're drinking more water because you don't want to get low in your other electrolytes like potassium, magnesium, calcium. You don't want that to happen. The reason diuretics are given for high blood pressure is to, you know, bring down the blood volume, as I was saying earlier, but insulin is really the master and commander of that. So if you make these tweaks in your diet, chances are, even if you are taking a diuretic for high blood pressure, you may not need it much longer. It's rare that I see that people have to continue taking a diuretic. Now, this does not include people with congestive heart failure or renal conditions or any other issues like that. I'm talking about simple high blood pressure. So, Forrest, thank you very much for your question. I have another question from Dylan. Dylan writes, like your podcast, Layla. Thank you, Dylan. Thank you so much for listening. His question is, I take GABA, melatonin, 5-HTP, and L-theanine to sleep. They put me to sleep, and I awake 2 hours later and take another theanine. But, he says, I tend to urinate quite frequently during the night. I gave a friend the same supplements, and he said he urinated every hour during the night, which was unusual for him. Do these supplements have a tendency to act as diuretics? Dylan also says, I eat a very low-carb diet, pretty clean diet, and am slowly eliminating red wine as I was drinking 3 to 4 glasses a night. Okay, a few things I want to tackle here. He's taking GABA, melatonin, 5-HTP, L-theanine to sleep. I'll tell you, first of all, some of these may have a diuretic effect, but what I would really blame for why you're having to urinate so often during the night is all the water that you're possibly having to drink with these nighttime supplements. How many people out there, you know, if we're drinking well into the evening and taking supplements and things like that, we will have the tendency to wake up one, maybe two or even three times a night to go urinate. It's because we drank all that water. It's best to drink water earlier in the day, but when you're taking supplements at night, obviously you have to have a little water. But a more interesting point Dylan brings up, he eats a low-carb diet and he's slowly eliminating red wine. He was drinking 3 to 4 glasses a night. Dylan, I know why you can't sleep. It's the wine. I know people who drink as little as 1 to 2 glasses of wine a night and it disrupts their sleep. Any alcohol, including wine, is a hypoglycemic. What you're experiencing with your sleep issues is hypoglycemia, whether it's around the time of bedtime or further into the night. And that could be why you require these sleep-inducing supplements. What I would say to you is get rid of the wine altogether. Really eliminate it. And when I say eliminate it, I mean for a minimum of 2 weeks, but ideally for a month, to see how this may impact your sleep. If I was a gambler, I might bet the bank that your sleep will get a whole lot better. The reason it wouldn't get better is if you're overdoing caffeine during the day. That would be another reason not to sleep well. Okay? So, GABA, melatonin, 5-HTP, theanine. Oftentimes, I've counseled patients and clients who wake up in the middle of the night for no good reason. I talk to them about the effects of hypoglycemia during the night, if there's something they're doing during the day that's causing that during the night, if they're having a dessert, a bedtime snack, which might be a little carby, or alcohol in the evening. These will all cause middle-of-the-night wake-ups. When you wake up in the middle of the night for no good reason, that's typically hypoglycemia. That's what happens there. Okay? So, Dylan, eliminate the wine altogether. See how that makes a difference. I suppose you could try taking a little less water with your supplements, but again, some supplements may have a little bit of a dehydrating effect, but I really don't think that's what's going on here. Alcohol also has a dehydrating effect, and that's what also can be impacting you in the middle of the night, causing you to urinate frequently. Okay? I have to tell you, so often I see with people who drink regularly, you know, a glass of wine at dinner or a couple of glasses of wine in the evening or a cocktail before dinner, I often hear of episodes of not being able to sleep. Alcohol is a central nervous system depressant. It can help us to go to sleep. It'll make us tired and sleepy. It has a sedating effect. But again, It also has a hypoglycemic effect, and that will cause us to wake up. So it will destabilize our blood sugar in a way that causes us to wake up. Now, one glass of wine in the setting of type 2 diabetes may be helpful. Let me explain. With type 2 diabetes, we have higher blood sugars, right? That one 4.5-ounce dose of red wine at dinner may help to lower higher blood sugars, which is helpful. But if we have anything more than that, it's not helpful. And by the way, I'm not a proponent of anyone beginning to drink red wine or alcohol or doing any of that if you were a teetotaler. If you are not somebody who drinks regularly, don't start. Don't start drinking red wine because you think it has health benefits. Please don't. The impact of the alcohol itself can be much more severe, obviously not to your benefit. Too much alcohol, or the tendency can be then to have too much alcohol, because alcohol is often a proxy to sugar. If you were a sugar craver before and now you're having alcohol, don't be surprised if you crave more alcohol. It's the same craving. Now, tending to drink regularly or even drink heavily, which in America is defined as 2 or more drinks a day, but in Italy might be defined as 5 or more drinks a day. I don't know. It really depends on who you're asking, right? The excess alcohol can cause other problems, such as high blood pressure. Alcohol will cause high blood pressure eventually. I have had clients, I will tell you anecdotally, who were having a glass, maybe 2 glasses of wine at dinner, eating a very healthy diet, Mediterranean diet, have borderline to high blood pressure. Once we eliminate that alcohol completely, that blood pressure completely normalizes. So that would be the first thing I point my finger at. That and excessive caffeine. I'm not a big fan of caffeine. It can cause adrenal stress. But a lot of us need that cup of coffee or strong cup of tea in the morning just to get going. That's fine. But you don't want, you know, the cup of coffee or tea to become an appendage. You don't want to be walking around with a cuppa all day long or be online at Starbucks 3 times a day. It's not good for your adrenals. Then you're basically being mugged by your hormones all day long, and that will cause high blood pressure as well. It will also impact your sleep. Dylan, let's talk about that. Think about the amount of caffeine you're taking in a day. And I counsel a lot of clients who may be sensitive to caffeine not to have any caffeine after noon during the day. Some can have caffeine up till 2 o'clock, maybe up till 4 o'clock. But did you know our genetics tells us if we are good caffeine metabolizers or not? So it's not a question anymore of is caffeine okay or it's not okay. It really depends on your genetic makeup. It depends on your profile. And now going forward in doing our nutrition assessments, looking at personalized genomics in making our nutrition assessments, this can tell us a whole lot more. This is a wonderful tool in our toolkit now as nutritionists to counsel patients on, hey, you know what? You don't metabolize caffeine well. You're a slow metabolizer, which may then inform us as to why that person is jittery even with a little bit of caffeine. It's because they're not metabolizing it well at all. These are the people who can't have any caffeine. They become anxious, they become nervous, they become cranky, they become dizzy. These are slow metabolizers of caffeine. And other people can drink caffeine all day long and it doesn't bother them. But let me little warning. Those slow metabolizers of caffeine are now advised not to have more than 2 or 3 cups of a caffeinated beverage a day. Why? It may cause heart palpitations, which may bring on heart problems and, you know, that kind of a scenario. So it's often not recommended. So keep that in mind. Dylan, eliminate your wine. And I know you're slowly eliminating the wine, and hopefully you're down to even half a glass by now, because really, if you just get rid of it completely, you may find that you don't need all these sleep-inducing supplements at once. And you may also find that you're not getting up in the middle of the night, you're not waking up in the middle of the night for no good reason. those of us who do wake up in the middle of the night because we have to urinate, it's important that if we, when we do come back to bed, that we're able to fall back asleep easily. If you're not, it is a good idea to take a theanine capsule of 500 milligram in the middle of the night. It's not really going to cause a hangover in the morning. Taking melatonin, however, in the middle of the night, not recommended. When you take melatonin, you want to take it around bedtime or an hour before bedtime because you need a full 8 hours of sleep in front of you to let that melatonin do its job. If you take it at 3 a.m. and you have to be up by 7, you may wake up with what we call a melatonin hangover, and you will feel like you've got warm lead coursing through your veins and feel like a lumbering elephant on the subway. Anyway, Dylan, thank you for your question. Forrest, thank you for your question. And I thank you all for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.